Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Welcome to the Depth Chart Podcast. My name is Freddie Maggard. I'm joined right now by Nick Roush in Louisville. And I'm joined also by Jay Dortch in the greater Louisville area. Gentlemen, where you two live must have been pretty fun to be you in the last couple of days, huh?
Yeah. I don't know about you, Jay, but I've enjoyed talking to Louisville fans. The only problem is that now they're defeated. It was fun before the game. They had a little bit of hope. We sucked all the hope out of them. They're done. They don't know what to do.
Man, I'm sure like you, Nick, I heard the entire week before, I mean, they really thought that they were going to beat us, which, you know, is just fascinating to me because if you look at the ACC in general and compare it to the SEC, it's night and day difference. And they don't see that, you know, they got caught up in what they did at Duke and to Duke, but you know, let's just say Duke didn't play in the SEC and it was fool's gold. And man, the sun is shining brighter. The air is a little more crisp. The smells of winter are here, and it's been great.
Well, for me, Louisville, Jay, and Nick, that's hard to study because they're playing, you know, they're playing in the ACC. It's really hard to get a grasp of how good or how not good Louisville has been the last three Governor's Cups. But to say this, about the SEC. Yes, LSU is down. Yes, Florida is down. But you know what's not down on those two teams? NFL talent is all over those rosters. So the teams may appear to be struggling, but there are grown man dudes all across those two deeps. So I thought Vegas valued Louisville's losses more than UK's wins. You know, but you have to take into effect. I mean, there's a bunch of pros on those teams that Kentucky beat.
You know, that line shocked everybody. I couldn't have been more excited when I saw it because I knew how Stoops and that team was going to respond. But it's fascinating to me that Vegas, because they rarely get it wrong. I mean, there's a reason Vegas looks like Vegas, right? Yeah. And they rarely get it wrong. But, you know, you look at, I mean, Missouri and South Carolina, how they ended the season, became bowl eligible. I mean, we just, you know, on any given Saturday, you know, you can get beat by anybody in the SEC.
Well, I mean, you brought up two teams. I mean, with South Carolina, Kingsley Enagbare is a top 10 draft choice, the edge rusher there for South Carolina. Missouri, you got Tyler Beatty and you got other dudes, Trajan Jeffcoat, and others that are pros. So, yeah, the teams may appear to be down, but there's pros. You know, just look at the draft records of the SEC and versus the ACC, and it's not close. And, Nick, I mean, what is 153-44 over the past three Governor's Cups? I mean, it's lopsided. Mm-hmm. You're right there in the thick of rivalry territory. Is it just me, or does it seem that Kentucky from the top down embraces this rivalry much more than Louisville? And is that something that has led to this? We can talk about rah-rah stuff all we want to. But the bottom line is Kentucky had better players that were better coached. Vince Merrill has owned the state of Kentucky. Personnel was significantly an advantage for Kentucky. And I thought Leon Cohen, Brad White was advantage Kentucky. But as far as just the vibe, the mood of the rivalry game, do you feel that Kentucky has embraced it more than Louisville? Because Louisville almost seems like they dread this game.
Well, some of it is, I mean, you talk about the Jimmys and Joes and the Kentucky just has better players. Well, a lot of those better players are from the city of Louisville and didn't feel like Louisville gave them the time of the day that they deserved. I mean, J.J. Weaver picked off a pass in that game. You had Isaiah Cummings playing. You know, Wandale talked about leading into the game, not really getting recruited by Louisville. You know, so there's a lot of bad blood between those kids from the city of Louisville and the school. And you don't get that. Like, that's just something that doesn't exist on their end. So, and I think, Jay, if you were playing right now too, those other guys in the locker room, they feed off of that hatred. And they're like, oh, they wouldn't recruit him? Well, we're gonna beat him up for our guys. We're going to go to war for our guys. Like, we owe Louisville one because they're too dumb to even show our guys some love. And I think that's where a lot of that kind of vitriol comes. And that's why UK gets up so big, because they're playing pissed off that Louisville didn't think highly enough of their own hometown kids.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. When those kids were growing up, Louisville was a better program. I mean, Petrino had them rolling, right? Mm-hmm. And they all pretty much said it. I think Weaver even actually said, I was heading to Louisville. I was going to Louisville. You know, but when – and Petrino was recruiting me hard, but when Satterfield got here, crickets. I mean, nothing. Even Wandale. I mean – and how do you don't go recruit those kids? I mean, they're in your – I mean, not Wandale, but the other kids, they're in your backyard, man. I mean Cummings, Casey and Weaver.
Cummings' parents work at U of L, you know?
Yeah.
He went to Mayo. I mean, how many Mayo kids have gone to UK before him in the last 25 years? One, two? They all go to Louisville, but they for whatever reason left them alone, and this is what Louisville's got to deal with now.
Yeah,
I think you'd have to go back to Terry Samuels and Salim Shaheed, and those guys from Mel that I played with. That, you know, it's just amazing to me. But I do think Kentucky embraces the rivalry more, and I think the two programs are far apart as far as styles, philosophy. I mean, as far as recruiting philosophy, Jay, it was obvious, and I'd heard, I can't confirm this, but, you know, just by listening to shows and being around a little bit, it feels like Louisville's defensive line strategy was to go small and go quick. And against Ole Miss, against Kentucky, against the SEC offensive lines, and Kentucky being one of the better offensive lines in the country, that philosophy ain't working. I mean, it was obvious Kentucky's size and strength advantages on the both lines of scrimmage. Did you see that as well, Jay?
There's no doubt. And, you know, I mean, you saw both sides just impose their will, you know, and that's obviously that's trademark Stoops, right? I mean, that's where he started. And when he got here, he said that's where they're going to start. But when you look at the defensive front seven, that Louisville has versus what we have on the line, I mean, there's just no comparison. And, you know, obviously we know speed kills, you know, but when you got, I mean, Bully, just take Bully on our side of the ball. I mean, that dude is, what is he, 350, 360?
Yeah.
Is that right? But he's quick as a cat. I mean, he's got speed, you know, I mean,
yeah.
Pascal's got speed, you know, at 280 or whatever he is. But, you know, you just don't see the physicality on the front seven for Louisville, their defensive side. And, man, it's night and day.
Yeah, Nick, I mean, it was obvious to me Kentucky's advantage, especially up front. But Will Levis, I mean – He's quickly becoming one of the most popular players in Kentucky football history. I mean, you're talking about embracing the rivalry. And for me, I think it's terrific that he is enjoying being the quarterback at the University of Kentucky. He had a heck of a game. I mean, you know, I mean, Cohen said, we just kept calling the same play because it was working, right?
Right.
And there were no adjustments in Louisville. And I think Kentucky, then Cohen especially, did a lot pre-snap that confused, gave false looks, false reads to Louisville, and just commenced to running the football down their throat.
Man, and the thing too, to kind of go, it goes back to the rivalry talk. I mean, he wasn't one of those guys that got spurned by Louisville by any means, but he embraced it with open arms. He went all in on it, and that's that kind of emotion, that kind of passion. I think that really feeds off of when your leaders play like that. It really energizes the team. I know some of the guys, you know, like Chris Rodriguez, like, man, he's out there running that hard. Like, you know, what I got to do? So yeah. I think somebody put it well earlier this year. Like, it helps that the best players on the team are also, like, good dudes who others can kind of look to and feed off of. And that's what's nice is you're going to lose a lot of seniors this year, but you still have a guy like Levis moving forward that's kind of carrying that mantle. And that's what you need kind of – leading the program moving forward.
Yeah, I mean, Jay, Kentucky rushed for 362 yards, and Cohen really didn't have to go deep into his playbook to get that many against the Cards. I mean, it was just, you know, here's what we're going to do. This is when we're going to do it. This is how we're going to do it, and you got to stop it. Louisville couldn't stop
it. Yeah, and can we just say that Will Levis took L's down to a whole nother level? I mean, there was some art behind what he did, but you know, I think that was a statement game that Stoops wanted and needed to make from that standpoint. I remember when I was playing at Tillman, we went and played Marshall County, and they had been talking crap the whole week leading up to it. And Coach Cox decided we're going to run one play on offense. We're going to run pro set right, sweep right, pull the guard, and we ran it every play, every offensive snap we had, and we destroyed them like 42-0. And I just felt like Stoops, like, you know what, that's what we're going to do. The coaching staff, so we are literally just going to go on there and physically impose our will and just pummel them into the ground. And that's what they did. Anything they wanted to do, they did.
Yeah, and, you know, we talked a lot about the offense, but – you know, I've been bullish on Brad White for 3 years now. This is the third consecutive year that Kentucky's finished in the top five in SEC in total defense. I think that is remarkable this season, given the injuries in the front seven and only playing with three cornerbacks. I mean, I think it's just wonderful the job that he did. And, you know, his plan was great too. I mean, make Cunningham one-dimensional, make him try to beat you by the air, and then just ever his defensive players, after that first drive, I thought played discipline with their eyes and rush lanes to not give up the big play to Louisville. Excellent plan, Jay, from Brad White.
There's no doubt about it. You know, and if you told me that Square was going to go out in the first quarter and we were still going to have that kind of success, you know, I would have been a little leery about that. But man, they tackled well in space. They didn't play selfishly, meaning they were trusting their reads and they were trusting their teammates, and they were flying to the ball. And they had a great game plan and they executed at a high level. And it, you know, from the very beginning, it put Cunningham on his heels. I mean, he didn't know, you know, and that the one play that really stands out to me was at the end of the first half when Pascal,
yeah.
When he made that play, I mean, yeah. I've gone back and watched that play. I mean, he literally was shot out of a cannon. I mean,
yeah,
Cunningham did not have a chance. And that to me, that summed it all up right there. I mean, we're just better. I mean, we're just better and we wanted it more. And to your point of on both sides of the ball with Cohen and Brad White, I mean, they're game planning, and Brad White's adjustments in game do not get enough respect or talked about very often. But, you know, I can promise you, because I was with them, there's a bunch of U of L fans around me. And when they drove down that first drive and scored, you know, everybody thought that that's the way it was going to be all night. Mm-hmm. And man, they turned around and made adjustments, and it was beautiful.
Nick, the adjustments made by Brad White was, I agree with Jay, but that plan would have been, you know, plans are plans until you get hit in the mouth. I thought he adjusted well, and I thought the Kentucky secondary played maybe their best game of the year.
Yeah, in part. Oh man, I hit the wrong button. My bad, I guess. Part of the plan was make Malik Cunningham throw the football, right?
Yeah.
When you pressure him, do not go with reckless abandonment. You have to rush discipline. And that's exactly what Kentucky did. They came with a very disciplined rush. And you mentioned Pascal. Pascal, 8 games in a row with the tackle for loss. He's now got 37 TFLs all time, tied for third most in school history, along with Bud Dupree, Marlon McCree, and Sweet Pea Burns. Like, Josh is playing like a bad man. And even the times that they weren't getting sacks, I think they only had one sack, they made Cunningham make a lot of throws he didn't want to, especially on third and long, where it's just, I can't run around back here. I can't try to extend the play. I've just got to get rid of the football. And that's how you help your secondary. You make the quarterback throw the ball in 2 seconds instead of 5.5. You know, it's hard to cover anybody for that long. And it was a nice complimentary football, something we hadn't seen from that defense in a little while.
Yeah, with Bully back too, just made a massive difference.
Yeah,
you know, up the middle. I mean, you can't deny what he brings to the table. And you know, it's a double team. Even if he does not make a tackle, he's affecting the play in a massive way, whether it's a rush or a running play. And to have him back was just huge.
Jay, Kentucky gave up 17 points a game with McCall in the lineup, 32 points a game without. So that just shows you how big of an impact he was. Nick, I thought Kentucky went over 500 yards. Did so and averaged over 500 yards in November, went for 511 against Louisville. I thought the number of the game was Malik Cunningham was held to 3.3 yards per rush attempt. That's pretty good.
Not too shabby. Not too shabby.
Was as long as 7? Is that right?
Seven or nine. Yeah. And Jay mentioned DeAndre Swearer going out early. Derrick Jackson came on and actually led the team in tackles with 8. And I've said this for 3 weeks in a row now since Kentucky's got to play their depth players. To me, those young second and third team defensive players are faster than the first team, especially in the front 7. I mean, Derrick Jackson can go. I mean, he's going to be a dude.
He can not only go, he brings the thunder. That dude, he tackles different.
Yeah, he's different. So is Trevon Wallace. And, you know, Jacquez Jones, DeAndre Swearer deciding if they're going to come back or not. Man, that inside linebacker room is deep, talented, and mean. And that's something that, you know, you have to be excited for going forward. But Kentucky rolls up 29 first downs. Only the offense only had 10 third down attempts. That's pretty daggone good. And of those, converted 6. So it was just a domination on both sides of the football. Kentucky wins. Nick, you live in Louisville. What's the vibe right now the Card Nation about their football program?
Complete apathy. It's apathy because they're stuck in a weird spot where you're going to a bowl game. Can you really fire your coach for going to a bowl game in two out of each of his regular kind of seasons? You know, you take out the COVID one. I think they're very worried that Cunningham's going to go elsewhere, but they won't blame him if he does try somewhere else for his final year. There's just a lot of, I don't know what that program can do to get fans excited going into next season without making a coaching change and bringing Jeff Brohm in. I hope that's not what happens. We got to keep Jeff as far away from that godforsaken Floyd Street as possible. But the one thing that Satterfield couldn't do was get dog walked by Kentucky. And what did he do? Got dog walked by Kentucky again.
Yeah, go ahead, Jay.
I was with some former players from U of L, and you know they're just they're lost, man. They don't know what to do. And you know, we were listening to Satterfield's press conference. I don't know if you guys heard this or not. And one of the first questions from the media was, "Well, what was the difference of the game?" And he said, really the difference of the game was their quarterback's running his legs, you know, how he ran the ball. And the next statement, I thought my buddies were just literally going to fall to the ground. They're like, he's a Satterfield 7, and we didn't prepare for that. We weren't prepared for him running the ball. And of course, all of them like, well, what film are you watching? Because yeah. He's done that all year. And, you know, I'm standing there with them at the beginning of the game. And, Nick, I don't know if you went to the game or not, but yeah, I don't know if it translated that well on TV, but it was empty. I mean, we probably did have as many fans, if not more. But you think about this. It's the biggest game of their season. Some might say Clemson was bigger, but I saw Clemson, the attendance was maybe 25,000, maybe. You know, you got the biggest game of the year. You're bowl eligible. You got a chance to beat your rival. And again, nobody shows up. And that is that place down there is a godforsaken dumpster fire. I can't stand that. I went to two games previous, almost got in a fight in both of them. I swore I'd never go. And the only reason we went this time is because my friend called me with sweet tickets.
They're a fighting bunch. They're a fighting bunch. They love fighting. They love talking smack. Now, I will say it's kind of fun to go there and drink beer if it's like not a UK game, but if it's a UK game, they're showing up ready to fight. I'll add the tailgating was very bad. They made a good showing for the opening kickoff. Like people got in the stands for, you know, a quarter or a half or so, but they were just showing up to drink beer and fight because they knew they weren't going to win that football game. It was it was a mess.
Let's go to the flip side. Mark Stoops extended the contract. Mitch Barnhart extended Mark Stoops' contract to 2028. Nick Roush wrote a great article on KSR about build the statue. I love that post. And listen, Jay, I mean, we're about the same age, man. This is the golden era. I mean, you know, I mean, it really is. I mean, there's never been a consistent winner at Kentucky like Mark Stoops has built. The recruiting has never been this good. I think you have to credit Mitch Barnhart for hiring Mark Stoops, a defensive coordinator. Wasn't a sexy choice, but he had a plan. Win the line of scrimmage, which Kentucky's never – on a consistent basis, which has been hard to do. Recruit Ohio and play physical – let's just say it before, you know, Leon Cohen, just Big Ten football. And has won at Kentucky at a level, you know, Nick wrote in his article that what, how many wins does he get to pass Bear Bryant?
Three more. If he wins the bowl game, then he can surpass it at Florida next year.
Yeah. I mean, what Mark Stoops has done is nothing short of remarkable. I think Mitch Barnhart really did the right thing here. Because he kept Mark Stoops in Lexington because somebody was going to pay him a lot of money. It's either going to be Kentucky or somebody else.
Yep.
Maybe not this year, but sure as heck, Nick. I mean, that's just teams or programs are poaching successful head coaches. And Mark Stoops has done something at Kentucky that's never been done before. And he has legitimized football in this state. Jay, former player to former player, dude, I'm extremely happy and thrilled that Mark Stoops is going to stay the coach of our team. Yeah,
there's no doubt. I mean, Barnhart does deserve a ton of credit for the hire. And seeing, you know, I heard stories. Of course, I wasn't there of the vision that he brought in and relayed to Barnhart and the administration. And he's done exactly what he said he was going to do. And I'll be honest with you, as a former player, there were times in those early days where I had doubts big time.
Yeah.
And I had frustrations, but he stuck to his plan. Barnhart stepped up and they did the right thing. I loved your post, Freddie, and yours, Nick, as well, as far as building statue. But this, you know, I also look at stability of the coaching staff. Yeah. You know, if you think about those first few years, you had Neil Brown, then you had Dawson, then you had Eddie Grant. It was that in a 4-year period, maybe?
Yeah.
And so, you know, those were issues. You know, you had DJ Elliott. You know, there was a lot of turnover in the staff till we finally got it right. And we all know, because, I mean, you look at Clemson, stability in the staff, if they're the right ones, you know, basically breeds success.
Yeah.
And we've got that. And Stoops has been able to attract that talent, recognize not only the talent in players and develop them, but also talent in this coaching staff and Brad White and Cohen and Mark's willingness to take a playbook from a playbook from Saban. I got to change my offense. It may not be exactly what I wanted, but I got to do something different. This isn't working. And we all know how much he loves Eddie Grand. And what Eddie Grand did here was great. And you know, he did what he had to work with. He did a really good job. But Stoops knew, and that was a tough decision for him.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, Stoops doesn't get enough credit, but I love how he credits his coaching staff and the players, and just kind of he just kind of stays in the background as much as he possibly can and gives them the glory and the praise.
Yeah, you know, when you're in charge, you're going to get critiqued. So Mitch Barnhart is frequently critiqued, but he got that football training facility.
Yep.
He did wonders with Kroger Field. It's a beautiful stadium now. He hired Mark Stoops and he retained Mark Stoops. So he deserves a lot of credit, but man, I am thrilled. And Stoops has welcomed back former players. He's done everything right. I mean, you know, everything as far as recruiting. You know, and you can see how he's welcomed back former players. How many legacy recruits are we starting to sign? So, and that's just only going to increase.
You need to keep an eye on too, Antonio Hall's son, Nick Hall.
Yeah,
they really like him. And on three, a lot of places were kind of low on him. On three, just made him a top 100 guy. I mean, kid's a stud. Wow. So, Kentucky going to have a top 15 class too, Freddie. Like, not only was it important to sign just for the future, but thinking a big picture, you've been doing a lot of knocking on the door, and you've reached this kind of 9-3 almost plateau, but I don't think it's going to plateau. This recruiting class, if you continue to keep building like this, you're going to be knocking down some more doors in the future. His 10th season, he'll be the first coach to ever coach 10 seasons at Kentucky. That says something.
I wrote about this yesterday. Is for the first time in my lifetime, I can't accurately say what the ceiling is for Kentucky football. I can't. I don't know. And that's a testament to Mark Stoops. I mean, I don't know what the ceiling is. Before, I mean, it was a hard ceiling. But now, who knows?
Yeah.
And I'm not making any claims of national champion or whatever. I'm just saying I don't know the ceiling. You know, this thing could go. But listen. I've been around. Both of you guys have been around long enough to understand that if this didn't get worked out with Stoops and there's changes elsewhere and whatever, this thing could have turned on a dime and went opposite. Yeah. you know what I mean? I mean,
especially with the portal now.
Yeah,
their approach to recruiting, you know, kind of obvious. We've talked about the recognizing talent. That's not rated properly, and they bring them in, develop them, they get them to different levels. But one of the things that, you know, you're just seeing a lot of fruit from is that relationship, that family atmosphere, that true, genuine caring about that person off the field, not only on the field. And even if they make that decision to go someplace else, obviously that hurts. And it's, you know, those guys put a lot into those relationships, not just from resources, but time away from their family to do those things, to build that and get that message across of what it means to be a Kentucky football family. But these kids are coming back. I mean, this world of the transfer portal, you just never know. And Wandell's a great example of that. And I've heard Wandell talk about A, how hard the decision was, but B, how literally they have kept in touch with those players after they leave. And of course they didn't know then that the transfer portal was going to be a thing.
Yeah.
And now seeing the fruit from that, but it's true that, you know, Coach Claiborne was a coach that cared about us off the field. Those Wednesday night meetings when he would walk around and come talk to us and without a note be able to tell you, hey, Freddie, you got to be on chemistry, man, or whatever. It's like, you know, how's your mom? And he wouldn't say your mom. He'd say, well, how's Joanne doing? Talking about my mom, you know, and he truly cared. And that meant something to us. And Stoops is the same. He's a player's coach, which I love. There's not many of those left that are truly players' coaches, and these players feel it. They know it.
Yeah, no, I mean, back to Jerry Claiborne. I mean, you know, he was a beloved figure by many. He brought me in after we beat LSU, Jay, and I thought for once I was going to get a pat on the back, you know, and he did do that. So I got a note to go see him at his office, and that's when the offices were over in then Commonwealth Stadium. I go in there, and I'm chesty, man. I'm like, yeah, this is, you know, I play good. And I walked in, Nick, and not one mention of the game, anything. I got a C on a stats test, and he wanted to know why. I mean, it just, well, you know, we won, we beat LSU, you know, but no, it was, I got a C on a stats test. But that was Jerry Claiborne. I would argue that Mark Stoops is the most popular sports figure in the state of Kentucky right now. And I think Vince Merrill's right there with him. Great job to keep that around. All right, Nick, I know you got to go, so we're going to go fast here.
Okay.
So, just quick answers. I'm going to go, who you got. All right.
All right.
Oklahoma State,
Cowboys, they got this. The Cowboys got this. They're going to be in the playoff.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Oklahoma State, 6.5-point favorite versus Baylor. Who you got?
Oklahoma State.
my ear pods or air pods, whatever you call them, went dead.
We can see your ear.
Freddie was holding the phone up to his ear. We just see his ear. Yeah, you don't need to do that, Freddie.
Hush. Can y'all hear me now?
Yeah.
Yeah, we can hear you, bro.
Yeah.
All right. Smart butts. Georgia is a 4-point favorite against Alabama. Who you got?
It's up to 6.5, but hey, Jay, they've been circling this Alabama game for a long time. I think Georgia's got their number this time.
I'm all over Georgia. And on that last one, I'm rolling with the mullet too, Nick. I love that dude. He's 40. I'm a man.
I'm going to take the Dogs, and I'm going to take Oklahoma State. Pitt is a 3.5-point favorite against Wake Forest. I'm going Pitt all day here.
This is the only game where I'm just not thinking that, like, I'm not all in on the favorite. I don't know. It's the ACC. It's going to be a bunch of points. I think Pitt probably plays a little bit defense, so Pitt probably has this.
I'm rolling Demon Deacons, man. I got a buddy that played there, so I'm rolling with him.
Huh. Michigan is an 8.5-point favorite versus Iowa.
Part of me.
Who you got, Jay?
I'm going to Iowa.
Oh,
I'm going Iowa, man. I think Michigan has a stumble. They look fantastic. It's the first time I've watched them all year. And Harbaugh went back to old school football and he just ran it down their throat. That Haskins kid is legit. And their front on both sides of the ball is legit, but I'm going Iowa.
I would like for that to happen because then there's a chance that Ohio State falls down to the Citrus Bowl to play Kentucky. And if you want to see a team get up for a game, it's Kentucky to play Ohio State. But, man, Hutchison and the other edge that they got, those dudes are ballers. And I can't see Iowa being able to score a point on them. Unless it's like a pick six or something. So, I'm going Michigan.
All right. The big one of the day, Army is an 8-point favorite against Navy. I'm going Army all day long. Nick, who you got?
Go Army, beat Navy. That's also next week, buddy. You know that, right?
Come on, we got to go Army. We're rolling with Army.
Yeah, we're rolling with Army. Come on. I know, Freddie, you've got to be objective this weekend, but I'm also rolling with the Blue Tornado. I want Tillman to be back. Bring him back to the top, Jay Dorch.
All right, we're going to go quick with these. Pikeville, Russellville.
Pikeville's too much for RVK. I'm cheering for RVK, but Mikey Benton can get it done. Pikeville.
I'm with you, Pikeville.
LCA versus Beachwood.
LCA has too much talent, Jay. Sorry, Beachwood.
Yeah, I'm with you. LCA rolls.
Belfry versus Paducah Tillman.
Let's go,
Tillman. Come on, man. Let's go, Tornadoes. Blue Tornadoes. They got speed. Belfry hasn't seen that speed.
Maybe the best game of the weekend, Johnson Central versus Boyle County.
Man, I think Johnson Central is just a machine. I don't know if anybody can slow that thing down.
I'm going Boyle County, though.
Oh.
Yeah.
Hmm. Interesting.
Douglas versus South Warren.
I picked Douglas earlier in the week, but I think Douglas moment's too big for him. South Warren.
Yeah, I'm going South Warren. I know the quarterback's dad.
Wow. Okay. Mail versus St. X.
Oh, Bulldogs. They're barking.
Yeah.
And also, we gotta say send our thoughts and prayers to male quarterback Nick Shuddy. His father was a longtime coach, passed away suddenly this week, so he's gonna be playing with a heavy heart. And I think they win one for their quarterback.
Yeah,
that's so sad, and our thoughts and prayers are with that family as well as the Satterfield family with Coach Satt and losing his dad.
Of course. Yeah.
Well, guys, I have no idea if you're hearing me or not because, you know, my ear things went dead. but I appreciate you all being on the podcast, and I'm sure you enjoyed looking at my ear in the Zoom call. And go Kroger and go Cats. Y'all have a good day. Thanks.
Go Cats.